Hey, Brian. This is the start of an experiment we agreed on. I will record a roughly 1 minute voice note for you to reply to. So the thing I've been thinking about a lot in the past days is the subject of conscious and intentional choice on how to act. And I think a good version of the question is something like, in the absence of external input and any clear and strong desires that arise from the self, how do you think it is best to go about making decisions about how to act or what to do? That's the question.
Hello, Joachim. In 1 minute, I certainly cannot answer a question that involves free will, the self, and motivation. But I would like to ask you a question, which is whether you think that the two sources that you've named, one being desire and the other being some kind of pressure, presumably social pressure from other people, would be the two drivers of the action for most of your life, and whether that's changed, or whether it's been constant, or indeed whether you disagree with those two framings.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for not answering my question and for getting back to me with another one. That makes a lot of sense to first kind of like examine the nature of the question. I would say that the external factors that I named aren't necessarily just like social pressure or peer pressure, but could also be the result of choices that I had already made. And I think of things like having a job that requires me to be in a certain place at a certain time and do specific things, or maybe having children that requires me to be present in a certain way. And I think a lot of actions, a lot of what I would actively do during the day would be determined by the fact that I have children in that case. So, yeah, everything outside of myself that could inform my actions. And then the other part, yes, desire, as in, but I'm not sure desire is a good word because obviously I know that you're quite deep into Buddhist learnings, and desire there is seen as something that we best kind of liberate ourselves from. But when I say desire in this case, I just mean an internal reason for doing something. Like, hey, I clearly feel that I want to act in this way. And yeah, that's kind of what comes up for me. I'm curious if that answers this question at all.
Hello, Joachim. So, yes, that does answer my questions. And it's in the absence of a sort of internal driving force. And I have no problem with desires, nor do I wish to rid myself of all of them. Can get more into that later. And in the absence of external obligations or patterns or habits or things that are required of us, perhaps. So, I think there's a few ways that I decide these things. One, you're not going to like, it's writing. And so, I tend to write every morning and push through the kind of top of mind stuff until I get into slightly deeper thoughts. So, it's a way of uncovering, but possibly also producing things that I want, or producing ideas, I suppose, about possible futures. So writing is one of them. And the other is conversation. So speaking to people, and there is a kind of generative element. For example, the idea to do a podcast in this slightly unusual way that I've never heard anyone do before came out of conversations, you know, and came out of the fact that we were interacting through these voice notes. So I'm curious, yeah, do you have any practices you've tried to find out what you desire, or conversations to that end?
Hey, Brian. So nice to listen to your message. Thank you. So I hear you say that you have two ways of digging deeper in yourself to find out what to do. And those are writing, which I guess is kind of like a conversation with the self, and then conversations with others. And yes, that sounds beautiful. And a question that comes up for me in that is something like, wait, but when you engage in those practices, the writing and the conversations, isn't that then because you already desire clarity about what to do? So it seems like there's a desire there that guides that behavior, that drives you to engage in those practices. Or perhaps I'm wrong, and perhaps those practices are established as habits that you have, in the sense that you don't need to experience a desire anymore because you automatically go into them. Is that perhaps the case? Because for me, the process that I'm going through now, and perhaps for context for people who would listen to this from the outside, I'm currently traveling in Japan, and I am committed to some kind of let's call it an intuitive traveling practice. I don't really have planned ahead. The only thing I know is that I have a Japan rail pass, so I can take any train, I can go anywhere. And I just kind of follow a flow. And for me, that very much feels like following my desire. So what I will do in the morning, after waking up and perhaps meditating or going to the gym, I will just sit and tune into the question, what is my desire today? And then usually something comes up, like today my desire was to go to a beautiful third wave coffee place where I had a drip coffee. And then after that, I walked to the old samurai neighborhood here in Kanazawa, which is a beautiful couple of streets full of those tiny Japanese houses with beautiful gardens and walls around them. And then after that, I followed my desire to go through the Museum of Modern Art here in Kanazawa. A beautiful place designed by Sanaa Architects, and they had an Yves Klein exhibition. And after that, I felt a desire for some food, so I found a nice little restaurant where I had a beautiful meal and a chat with the owner. And that's kind of like how I go about my day. And from my perspective, all of that feels like tuning into what my desire is in the moment and then following that desire. And perhaps there is no answer, right? But I'm maybe realizing that the question isn't very interesting, my initial question, because maybe there isn't anything outside of our desires and external forces that makes us act. And I'm curious what you think about that.
Hello, Joachim. It's great to hear from you. And yeah, I'm extremely envious of your freedom, the good coffee, the samurai neighborhoods, and the museum visits, the food. I've never been to Japan, so I can only imagine. But it does sound like you've got quite the experience each day. And I'm glad that you mentioned meditation as a way of guiding your intuitions as well and determining what your desires are, tuning into them, I think you said. And I do that as well. And to answer your question, certainly writing is a habit of mine, as is meditating as a way, I suppose, of tuning intuitions, tuning into desires. Certainly, I think that's one of the effects. So when you ask me, how do I determine it? Those are things that come to mind as ways that seem to have that effect. But I don't think I meditate or I write sort of instrumentally in order to find out what my true desires are. And although those are quite solid habits, the conversation one is, I'm always in search of good conversations, and I've had many with you, but that's perhaps less habitual in the sense that, you know, I wake up, do yoga, meditation, morning pages in a journal, and I do speak to friends as often as I can, but I don't have a practice, maybe, if that's the way you put it, or even as much of a regularity as I might like in that regard. And I think that one thing that's coming up for me is this difference between what we might desire in the moment and some larger purpose or vocation. And that's one that I've been thinking about a lot as I try to find ways to get support for the book that I'm working on philosophy, as you know. And so that's another interesting question, because there's one question, which is, what do I do literally in the moment? And I think that's possibly more of your question, which is that you might be sitting in a cafe and literally wonder, what do I do next? And there's a kind of larger question that, at least for me, feels like a different kind of input than desire, which is an overriding sense of purpose that perhaps guides desire in the moment, but is also not quite the same as just what I feel like doing on any given day. So I'm not sure if that's at all helpful, but maybe I wonder if it means anything to you, or whether you would say that your question is more on the micro level or the macro level, or somewhere in between, and whether you are perhaps in search of a purpose that might guide some of your day-to-day desires.
Hey, Brian. Thank you so much for your thoughtful response. I always enjoy receiving one. You're right that my days are nice. And I guess that's by design. Even then, sometimes, you know, some days flow more easily than others. And some days it feels as if my intuition guides me effortlessly. And other days, like today, really, it's as if that flow is interrupted sometimes, or there is a lack of clarity around the possibilities or something. And then perhaps I choose to do nothing specific, or let's say nothing that is specific to the place where I am. And this afternoon, for example, I am mostly just reading and listening to music and replying to some voice notes like yours. And none of these things needs to be done in Kyoto, where I am at the moment. But then again, this is what is real. So yes, indeed, I would say I still follow my intuitive sense of how I want to spend this day, even if there is a voice in me that says something like, hey, dude, you're in Kyoto. Why are you sitting in your hotel room? And I'm compassionate with that voice, and I allow it to be there. So that's all good. As to your point about the micro and macro perspective on the question of how to choose, how to act, you're absolutely right. The original question that I tweeted was very much a micro moment. It was indeed exactly just getting up from my seat at a cafe and realizing in that moment that I did not know what I was getting up for. What was my next step in that day? And I think maybe that's not such an interesting question anymore. I think indeed the bigger question is cultivating a sense of purpose. And I choose these words carefully because cultivating a sense of purpose feels better to me than saying something like having a purpose. One feels generative and becoming. The other feels dogmatic, almost, and perhaps rigid. I don't quite know how to begin to address this question of purpose. I have sat many a time with my journal to write about this, and I have engaged with other people's materials about this, some books I've read and some courses and instruction manuals and, you know, how to find your purpose and things like that. Mostly these go into an exploration of values, an exploration of enjoyment, an exploration of perhaps a certain vision of, you know, what you think the world should be like, and then try to combine those into a sense of purpose. And, well, I won't say that was useless. I think some meaningful phrases have come out of those explorations. But right now, that approach seems too synthetic for me. It feels forced, perhaps, or artificial. And I guess what I'm looking for is a more felt experience of purpose. And in the past, I've had many fantasies about this, as I guess many people have, fantasies of, you know, changing the world for the better, making the world a better place, all these kind of big hero narrative purposes. And I think I have quite consciously stepped away from those. Maybe out of fear that any kind of hero narrative, purpose-driven mission is dangerous, as it often ends in drama or suffering, because we fail to see the long-term or general consequences of our actions. I think humans in general are not very good at understanding long-term effects of things, which is why I think we struggle so much with something like global warming. And I've seen, I guess, throughout history, a lot of those lofty movements that all want to make the world a better place. I think in the end, every movement almost is about making the world a better place, right? And then you see how they fail because their model of what constitutes a good world is, by definition, limited and cannot encompass all of human experience and reality. And so I'm wary of that kind of reasoning, and I don't engage with it anymore. I have liberated myself from the illusion that it is possible for me to know how I can make the world a better place. And that's not to say that I don't strive towards that in a different way. I think now, I would say for myself, I have some kind of a grassroots approach to this. It's more like, how can I be kind and compassionate to myself, believing that will create ripples in how I treat the people around me and my direct environment, and that will create ripples because those people will be influenced by that and might be more kind and compassionate to people around them. And I think that's more beautiful and perhaps less dangerous approach than trying to create a system that forces people to be compassionate or kind. I'm curious about your thoughts.
Thank you so much for your message. It was really good to hear your reflections. And I suppose I'm thinking about effortlessness, flow, smooth operation, and what its opposite is, whether that's suffering, disruption, uncertainty, something like that. And part of the reason is that I've been reading this book called Greek Buddha by Christopher Beckwith. And he's arguing that a form of skepticism in Greek philosophy associated with a guy named Pyrrho might be an early form of Buddhism that gets transmitted back to Greece via Alexander's contact with India. And one of the central questions is about certain terms in Buddhism, in particular, the three characteristics of impermanence, not self, and dukkha, or suffering, as it's usually rendered. Although many people have a problem with that rendering of it. In Beckwith's argument, dukkha is usually contrasted with sukha. And so the common translations of this are something like suffering and happiness. Sometimes you get unsatisfactoriness for dukkha. But Beckwith is arguing that sukha, which means the smooth operation of a vehicle, might be the opposite of dukkha. And so in that sense, this word dukkha might be something like disruption or not flowing, effort, just unsmooth operation, I suppose. So that's just something that it brought up for me. And I'm wondering, yeah, what you think the kind of difference between those days that seem to flow and seem effortless and others where it doesn't flow or it seems like it takes effort, and how that relates to, yeah, I suppose where you are, because it sounded like the last time you recorded, you associated it with some level of effort and maybe some conflict between being in Kyoto and feeling like you should be enjoying it somehow. Yeah, just curious to hear your reflections on that. And I liked what you said about cultivation of a purpose as being generative and which you associate with becoming, whereas having a purpose seems potentially to restrict things or about being or dogmatism. The Purinists that I mentioned, they think that the secret to getting to happiness, which they seem to have discovered by accident, is to avoid dogmatism or its opposite. So under their understanding, dogmatism is having a view about the truth before investigation, whereas its opposite is something like academic skepticism, where before you cease the investigation because you conclude that it's the truth is not attainable, let's say. So any school, the Stoics, the Epicureans, etc., that believes they can and do know the truth, the skeptics call dogmatic, and they also call the academic skeptics, who believe that truth can never be ascertained, to be dogmatic in a similar way. And what the Purinists believe, whom I've called skeptics, they're sometimes called skeptics and sometimes not, is that you must never cease investigation. And they more or less, by setting out on a kind of dogmatic quest to ascertain the truth and finding themselves continually frustrated, perhaps impeded or suffering, they found that through opposition, by taking the dogmatic position and reversing it, but never concluding the opposite, just allowing this tension between these two, they could suspend their judgment. And once the judgment was suspended, another state would arise of unperturbedness, as it's sometimes called ataraxia. And so it's one that I've been thinking about a lot in terms of dogmatism. And it seems to me it might relate also to what you said about your exercises to find a purpose, which do seem somewhat theoretical. I think you said they seemed synthetic, that they were about thinking in a room, maybe journaling, writing. And I wondered how that might contrast with emergent forms of purpose that arise between people in experimentation or, and experimentation makes it sound kind of planned. I suppose I'm thinking of something more spontaneous where you respond to something from someone else rather than kind of going on an inward mission to find your true purpose. And I agree that there is a danger to that internal journey if you then dogmatically try to impose that will on the world. So I wondered, since we're talking about purpose, how you might relate that to relationships or more spontaneous forms of meaning that come out of interactions rather than coming before experience or before investigation. I liked what you said about your grassroots approach and the ripples caused by certain forms of interaction. Could a sense of purpose be emergent from relationships rather than preceding or producing them. I look forward to hearing your thoughts. This is Brian Cam, and you've been listening to Clear Story. Since you've listened to the end of this episode, you're exactly the kind of person that I would love to hear from. So please visit briancam.com, where you can find links to my social media and other ways to contact me. If you would like to receive infrequent updates about my work, please subscribe at briancam.substack.com. If you're interested in supporting my work, please visit patreon.com/briancam, where I post everything that I'm working on. Both of those links are in the show notes, and I look forward to hearing from you.